Sarah Oliver, who is an operations director and improvement advisor for the Institute for Healthcare Improvement. Her work focuses on health system strengthening in East Africa, addressing maternal and child health issues, and the elimination of mother-to-child transmission of HIV. Prior to directing IHI's portfolio of initiatives within Africa, she worked with Mikanda, IHI's partner in Malawi, supporting health professionals to improve the quality of care provided to mothers and neonates during the birthing process.
Good morning, everyone. Again, my name is Sarah Oliver, and I will be talking about the Partnership for HIV-Free Survival this morning. So the first question that I'll answer is, what is the Partnership for HIV-Free Survival? And I note that I should have said that I have no relationships to disclose before I start. So the Partnership for HIV-Free Survival is a multi-country learning platform. We believe that it's the first multi-country learning platform of this kind. We're focused specifically on the postnatal maternal to child transmission, or MTCT, period, and we have two objectives that we're trying to accomplish. The first is to achieve universal breastfeeding and improve nutrition outcomes of mother-child pairs, and this is for both HIV-positive and HIV-negative moms, as well as ensure that all breastfed infants are receiving the appropriate ARV coverage if they're exposed to HIV. So the cascade, I believe most of us know this, vertical transmission is about 35 to 40% if it's unimpeded. About 25% of transmission that is unimpeded happens during pregnancy and the birthing process, whereas about 15% happens during breastfeeding. In the countries that we know of that are doing best at this reduction, they can reduce transmission rates to about 2% perinatal and only to about 10% postpartum. So that's still a big chunk of children that are infected postpartum. So that's where we're very focused on in our efforts. So the goal of this collaborative, this six-country collaborative, is to reduce transmission from 15% to 1%, and then to increase maternal and infant nutrition outcomes to about 95% using NACS, so Nutrition Assessment and Counseling Services. One of the things you'll see there is the question marks on the baseline. So unfortunately, we don't have a lot of data on this. So one of the subcomponents of the project is to help these country teams gather more evidence to learn from and to help direct their policy, because this data isn't necessarily collected on a daily basis in the facilities. So there are six countries that are in this collaborative. It's Kenya, Uganda, Tanzania, South Africa, Lesotho, and Mozambique. The co-designers of the project were USAID, WHO, and my organization, IHI. And what's really important to note about this project is that it's supporting existing initiatives in EMTCT as well as nutrition. So this is integrating with their existing services and supporting them as they're pushing forward to a healthy HIV-free generation. The focus of the project is on four steps of the care pathway. The first step is retaining all mother-infant pairs in care. I think you've heard from my colleagues that this is a challenge in America as well as internationally. So the next step is to ensure that they're receiving the nutrition support and assessment that they require. So they, when they do come in for services, they're getting that as a regular component of all of their care and treatment. Knowing the HIV status of every mother-infant pair is next. So this is testing at first visit and then retesting as is dictated important in each of these country policies. So if the mother is found to be HIV negative, then she goes back into the system to be retained in ANC care and well child care and keeps being retested throughout. If the mother is HIV positive, then we're working to ensure optimal ARV coverage for her and her infant. So the lens that we use to look at this project is the quality improvement methodology, which you heard a bit about in the first presentation. And I think we all are aware of the gap between what clinical trials find and what we see in real life in the clinics that we serve and support. So in KwaZulu-Natal province in South Africa, in 2007, the first push was use of nevirapine to prevent mother-to-child transmission. The studies were showing that in the clinics, it could reduce mother-to-child transmission from about 25% to about 12%, which was really exciting at the time. And so we went in to see, or these researchers went in to see what it was happening in real life in the province. And unfortunately, they were still seeing a transmission rate of about 22%, even though all of the drugs were readily available, the clinicians had been trained on this service, but it didn't translate into the reduction that it could have been. In 2008, when dual therapy was introduced, again, there was a check on clinical trials, and clinical trials were saying that you could reduce it to about 2%. And while there was a drastic and very celebrated reduction of transmission to about 8%, it still wasn't reaching where it could have been, where the scientists were saying that it could be. So in 2012, there was another check-in, and transmission rates in the province had dropped to 3%, which is quite close to where they were hoping to be with the clinical trials. And the main change between 2008 and 2012 was threefold. First was the activation of political will, so leadership engagement on the political scene. The second is that nurses were given the drugs to distribute rather than the clinicians. And the third was a quality improvement collaborative that was held throughout the country to really speed up this uptake of change, and it was called the Accelerated Plan. So quality improvement tries to shy away from this traditional top-down approach where we see a problem like mother-to-child transmission, we have a solution, nevirapine, we implement the solution, we push it out to the facilities, and then it meets system barriers. So people don't know how to use the drugs, they don't know where to find the drugs, they don't know how to engage with the patients. So it doesn't get the success that we had expected it. So quality improvement methodology is trying to close the gap from the clinical trials to where we should be. So we start with a system analysis. So we help folks look at the data that they have and look at the systems that they're engaged with so they can generate ideas on how to incorporate this new work or how to better improve what they're working on to achieve the goals. And they do this through small-scale testing. So we call it the PDSA cycle, the Plan, Do, Study, Act. There are a lot of nods and smiles. I don't think this is new to a lot of people, but it's small-scale testing so you can better understand how this new thing works in your system and also refine it until you're ready to spread it. So you start small and then spread larger so you have more faith and confidence in what you're doing. This leads to implementation at a larger scale, and then it has a higher chance of success than immediate rollout. So this is what our countries are working on right now. They're starting at a smaller scale. We're just in phase one, which is 0 to 9 months. They have selected a handful of facilities in their target districts that their ministries have engaged with them on. They plan to scale up to a few more districts as they've gathered more learning, and then they all plan to go to national spread. They're gathering these ideas and really doing these testing through the Breakthrough Series collaborative learning session model. And that model has each of the facilities creating quality improvement teams. And these teams, as Rhea was mentioning, are including facility staff as well as community members, district leaders, everyone who is engaged in this project joins these quality improvement teams. And each of these teams comes together on a national level in learning sessions to exchange ideas and share best practices. They share what barriers that they're facing and how they're passing through these barriers, things that worked really well, and sharing them with their colleagues so their colleagues can go home, test them in their own context, and see what's working very well. They come back, they report out, and all the while, folks are collecting these ideas and information, putting them in a booklet that we call a change package that will speed up the spread of this as they go on to scale up. Throughout the whole thing, they're receiving intensive support from around quality improvement as well as nutrition from some of our partners like URC, who's represented here with the ASSIST project. So this is happening in each of the countries, as well as on a six-country multinational level. So I just came back from our first learning session in Uganda, and the teams come together. So there's a national steering committee that brings together all that's guiding the improvement work in each of the countries, and they send representatives to meet and engage with the other countries to share their country's barriers and their country's successes so they can cross-nationally learn from each other and spread more quickly. There's also, in addition to the PDSA cycles happening in between the sessions, we have learning platforms and exchanges for them. So we have a website that they engage with, and calls, listservs, things like that to keep the ideas generation and sharing moving. So the early progress of the countries, as I was saying, I did just come from our learning sessions, and they were very engaging and exciting. And each of the countries is on a different step of their pathway, and they've joined it and are all moving forward together. So each of the countries has teams established, and they have their learning sessions either executed or planned for the next month or so. And each is focusing on a different component. So Kenya is very focused on community engagement because after data analysis and working with their national policies, they've realized that retention is their biggest issue. So they're working and engaging with the community to ensure those mother-baby pairs are engaged in care. Lesotho is focused on exclusive breastfeeding because their rates are quite low. So they're looking at that as a component of better nutrition outcomes and care for and ARV coverage. Interestingly, Mozambique is using this as a platform to revise their data registers, so to make it longitudinal so that you can track the mother-baby pair throughout until 2 years of age. So teams are using this to focus on different components of their pathway that is what we call the burning platform, so the most pressing issue that these teams have, all towards the same goal. South Africa is very established. We talked about that with the accelerated plan example. So they're very comfortable with the quality improvement methodology. They've already had two learning sessions, and they're very focused on the nutritional aspect of it because they have worked so heavily in the HIV aspect of it. Tanzania and Uganda are both linking it with their Option B Plus rollout, as are many of the other countries as they're transitioning to B Plus care. Tanzania is focusing on mHealth, again, for retention, which is a theme, I think, at this conference and everywhere. Uganda has a great example of ministerial engagement. So the Minister of Health was the opener for the conference last week, which shows a level of engagement and support that has really pushed this project forward in Uganda and has really allowed them to engage and run with the information. So those are our preliminary results. We hope to come back next year and show you some of our actual data that we're getting out of this project. And the mantra of the project is something that I think you all have probably seen on postcards, and if you've ever flown through the Joburg Airport, it is everywhere. But the motto is to go fast, go alone, to go far, go together. So we're really walking together and towards a highly nourished HIV-free generation.